Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome. It's time for Startup Office Hours. I'm Scott Fox from the Startup Council. Welcome to you. We're here to help. We're here to help founders, investors, entrepreneurs, people with ideas who want to change the world, and that you've decided that entrepreneurship may be the way to do it. I'm here to help you as well as everyone who's going to be joining us in the chat today. We even have a special guest, and we do this at least once a month here on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, Blog Talk Radio, and everywhere else that we can find to try to help investors connect with entrepreneurs and understand how startup investing and growth works. I've got a long background in this stuff. I've been doing internet startups for 25 plus years now. I've even written these books back here to try to help you. There's three in the middle are in English, and the rest are in different languages all over the world. There's a page about me on Wikipedia if you want to know more. Basically, I'm a longtime entrepreneur. I still see myself as an entrepreneur first, and then I'm also an investor, formerly an attorney, an investment banker. I've been on both sides of lots of deals and are here to try to help demystify how the world of startup fundraising works so that you can bring your vision out to the world. We're trying to solve problems, make the world a better place, and maybe make you some money in the meantime. Also improve your communities, create new companies and jobs, improve the tax revenues, you know, improve the schools, improve the restaurants, everything around that benefits from entrepreneurial initiative. So thanks for joining me today. I do this about once a month. Like I said, it's lunchtime here in Southern California where I live, and I do this to try to help you. So we invite you into the chat room. If you're on YouTube or LinkedIn or Facebook, you can come on in and post in the chat. Let's see. Let's post that up there. We've got a lot of different little messages for you here. Let's see. Join us. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about joining us. Startup Council is a free community service organization that I started to try to connect all the legs of the stool that build the entrepreneurship community. So there's a lot of founders out there, like you maybe, entrepreneurs, not just from Silicon Valley, but from not just California and not just the United States, but all over the world. There are people who want to participate in the digital revolution. And that's why I do this. I'm trying to help you, and we're trying to connect the dots. Because there's a lot of information out there. In fact, it's like drinking from a fire hose, as they say, right? So much information, so many do this, do that. But there are better ways to do things. And I'm here to give you the plain message and try to speak in plain English how this stuff works from behind the scenes. And that's my goal for you, is to benefit from that, from my expertise. And we're here to help you. So if you want to participate today, please do. Invite your friends to come and join us. We're over here, like I said, on YouTube and LinkedIn and a bunch of other places across the internet. If you want to comment on LinkedIn or YouTube, we're going to put up a chat room in a minute, and that will post your questions out so that we can see them and respond. And I really want to encourage all of you to network with each other. I don't have all the answers. I mean, I try, but I'm really just kind of convening the meeting, and this is a party for you to enjoy. Go ahead and mingle. Post your YouTube URL, your LinkedIn connection, maybe promote your website. Tell us what you need help with, and I won't be able to take all the questions today, but you can talk to each other in the chat room, okay? So I'll turn that on in a minute. But I want to first make a couple quick notes. This is sponsored by the Startup Council, like I said, startupcouncil.org. This is a group that I created. I piloted it here in Southern California. We've been doing this for half a dozen years now in Southern California. We've really helped the community here grow and connect, and now we're doing it nationally and even internationally. So welcome to all of you who are from overseas as well, trying to connect the dots so that it gets easier. When I raised money for my first company back during Web 1.0, there was nobody. Right? It was all DIY. And these days, there's tons of information. And the pendulum has swung almost to the other side, right? There's so much information, you don't know who to trust, who to believe, or how to weed through it all to get the question that you need answered. So that's what we're doing here. That's what the Startup Council is about. We have a bunch of services there. You can go and check it out. It's all free to join the newsletters. We've got events and an investor's directory and a place you can list your startup and all kinds of things that can help you, all right? So trying to help you out there. Let's see. Oh, here's another version of the same thing. And what I wanted to say, okay, we have a couple disclaimers here because we've got a special guest today, like I said, and we need to Where we go. Okay. So, first of all, this session will be recorded. It'll be online. It's live right now. It'll be posted on our YouTube channel, a lot of other places. And these videos tend to get thousands of views, right? So don't say anything stupid, okay? If you come on camera or in the chat room, you know, use some business sense. This stuff is not confidential. We're just trying to help. More importantly, this is not qualified legal or financial advice. Every situation is different, okay? So this is just, you know, friendly, free advice from some guy you met on the internet. So don't rely on this too heavily. You should find your own advisors and consult them to do the right thing for your situation, okay? So don't believe anything I say without doing your own research. I'll try hard to give you the best answer I can, but like they say in the car commercials, your mileage may vary, right? So you've got to do your own work here. None of this stuff is easy, but we're trying to make it easier, okay? So while I'm at it, if you liked and subscribed, if you're watching on YouTube or LinkedIn, please comment and share. That's what drives all the algorithms. And really, you know, the goal here is that everybody participates so that we attract more people, right? And if we get more views, then there's more people in the chat room, more of you to help each other, more expertise, more investors, more service providers to help you get your startup moving farther and faster. And that's our goal. So please like, subscribe, comment. You know how this stuff works, right? That's what we're doing here and would appreciate your help very much. Okay, so let's see. Now we talked about me and we're going to have a bunch of people backstage who are going to ask questions. I can see Ian and Kingston and Justin so far. All you guys, if you want to come on camera once we get going, you got to turn your camera on, right? So this is a live show, and we want to have you participate visually as well as audioly or orally, I guess is the word. Next, I want to talk a bit about our guest is going to be here in a minute. This is Joe Daniels, and Joe is an attorney. He specializes in venture capital-backed startups. And he works with all kinds of startups and all over the United States and probably internationally too. We can talk to him about that because I know many of you are from overseas. And we'll get going with him. And so I'm specifically looking for legal questions. If you have legal questions today, Joe is going to be here to help you. Again, not financial advice specific to your situation. You would have to engage him or engage your own attorney to get, you know, specifics. But trying to help you with general advice that might be directionally helpful as you grow your company. And here's his contact info. Joe Daniels is his name, from Nelson Mullins, and he'll be here in a couple minutes. All right. So let's see. What else do I need to cover? I think we're kind of getting there. Our sponsor today. Okay, so today we have a sponsor. A sponsor is the National Startups Directory. And the National Startups Directory is, believe it or not, a service that we built for you. And the Startups Directory, I'm looking for the logo so I can show you. It looks like this. NationalStartupsDirectory.com. And the idea here is that you can go and list your company, and we'll get everybody listing in one place in a nice standardized format. And why would you bother doing that? Well, because when you post on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, investors are never going to find you, right? That's not where investors are looking. Investors want it served up to them in a standardized format so they can look at a lot of companies at once. And that's what we built at National Startups Directory, okay? And you can see on the screen there's a URL and a promo code, and you can head over there and get listed for free. It's newish, and we want you to go and take advantage, right? And hopefully we'll charge a little more later to cover our costs at least, but we're trying to help. And that's what I do, trying to help you, okay? So that's our sponsor. All right. So, okay. So let's bring in the chat room. Let's say hi to some people. We're going to turn on the chat. And please, if you're checking in with us here, please let us know where you're from too. That's always fun to see what country you're from. There's a lot of different people around the world listening, partially because my books, like I said, my books are in many languages, and we're happy to welcome you and hear about you and your questions. And we'll try to get some of those questions as well. And once Joe gets here, we're going to bring people on camera to talk to him as well. So hello, Matuzis Wojnarowicz. I'm guessing that's Poland. Maybe one of these books is in Polish. So welcome to you, Matuzis. And apologies if it's not Polish. That's just my guess. And there's my friend Andre from Houston and Virginia. And Rusty's from Austin. Great. And let's see who else we got here. Okay, we're streaming in here, Naples, Florida, NYC. Hello, David and Prashant and David and Maxil. Okay, You need mentors and funding. Yes, okay, good. Maxell, you're in the right place. We'll try to help you as much as we can. Can an F-1 visa student start a startup? Sure. This is America, man. You can try whatever you want. That doesn't mean it's going to be a success. Most countries have much more specific laws about who can and can do what. Actually, that's a great question for Joe. When Joe comes in a few minutes here, we can repeat that if you remind me. System of the Browns. And let's see, who else we got here? Second time here. Hello, Ian. Welcome back. I see you finally figured out where to send in the questions properly. Good job. And Angel Roman, you've been here before, I think. Playa del Rey. Hey there. Okay, you're not in Poland at all. And maybe your name is Polish, but you're not from there, or you're not there today. And Houston, Texas. Excellent. Got a good group going here. Okay, so let's... Okay, great. So now what else do I want to say? I got a couple more notes, chat and share, URL, and yes. So why do I do this? Let's just do a minute about that. I do this because entrepreneurs drive the ecosystem. And they don't just drive the ecosystem, they drive our society, right? If you're one of the people out here who's building something, you are in the right place because we're getting together a community of entrepreneurs who can all help each other. And that's what we're trying to do together. So thank you for being here. Entrepreneurs are the ones that make things happen. They're my favorite people to hang out with. I'm not just talkers, but doers. So we'll do a little talking today, but we're really about the doing. And the reason I do this is because I get really frustrated about the gatekeeping that goes on with all the expertise that's been built up in Silicon Valley. I went to Stanford years ago, and my timing was right. I got lucky. I was in the right place at the right time and kind of rode that wave. And I'm really committed to helping the rest of you figure this out. And especially if you're younger than I am, which a lot of people are these days, you can get involved. But there are more twists and turns to the road and kind of best practices that may not be obvious to you if you don't have a business background. And that's what we're trying to share here. So if that sounds like fun to you, please let us know your questions, and we'll try to get through to all of those. So let's, we'll start bringing a couple people on here, and then our friend Joe will be here shortly. And then I will put up the URL for additional people. Once Joe arrives, I'll put up the URL so that more people can participate on camera. Oh, you know, I forgot to do a sound check. I guess you guys are hearing me okay, yes? Justin, I can see you. Can you hear me okay? Is this working well? Yes? Is that a thumbs up? Okay, anybody else? Can you hear me? See me? Yes. Okay, thank you, Justin. Excellent. Okay, let's try this. Okay, so what do we want to talk about? May and Kezi and Kingston. Okay, excellent. Okay, Justin, can you put in the chat room there, what is it you wanted to talk about? Is this the same Justin that emailed me about Shark Tank? Is that the case? Or are you some other Justin? There's lots of Justins these days. And Ian, yes, I've got your questions. We'll get to that in a second. Hi, May. Nice to see you again. And we will... Yes. So those are yeah, suddenly a bunch of yeses. Okay, that's the sound check. Excellent. Thank you, guys. Okay, David, let's do David real quick here. David, I'd like to hear your pure tech startups getting funded and what's needed to present a concept well to VCs. David, we're going to talk about that this whole hour. So all of this is about getting funded for VCs. And I would encourage you also to look back at the past editions of this show. Let me add, let's grab this. We have many, many hours. I'm not against talking about that, but if you really want to know, there's many, many hours archived there on the Scott Fox channel on YouTube, and we will cover that as well. And then what else? Oh, I wanted to share with you guys my LinkedIn. Let's do that, and then we'll start taking our, there we go, there's that. Put this in the room as well. Cool. Okay, so hopefully you can see those. So please come say hello. Happy to talk to you. Okay, so what do we got back here? Yes, okay, Justin, I'm going to bring you on camera because it sounded like you are here locally, and that doesn't look like it's working. Justin, can you turn your camera sideways? Maybe it's, oh, there you are. Okay, there was just a delay. Hey, nice to see you.
Oh, hey, Scott. Yeah, I don't know if you remember, but I was at one of your events, in-person events, over at the that one like square that had like, I don't know. It was like a couple months ago.
Okay. Yeah. well, good to see you again.
I'm having a hard time trying to remember.
No, no worries.
Specific landmarks. But yeah, I was I saw that you had this cool like talk about angel investors, and I'm kind of in that process right now of getting an investment. I did Shark Tank, and then what is it? Got an investment from Mark Cuban.
Wow! Congratulations, man. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Pretty wild update from me. And then we gotta move the background to something that is not a little more professional. There we go. But yeah, I'm kind of navigating this as we go. So, you know, I don't have a whole lot of experience. We're still in the early stages of it. We haven't signed anything.
Okay.
I haven't signed anything.
That's smart.
But I just want to get your valuable input before signing my life away, so to speak.
Sure. No, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, great.
So I copied and pasted some of the questions.
Yeah, you did, actually, didn't you?
One of them did get contacted.
That's great. Well, Justin was one of the helpful people who sent in some questions beforehand as well, and that's really helpful, so thank you. Let's see. What do angel investors look for beyond Go ahead.
I'm going to try to move into a better spot where I have better internet. Hold on.
Mm-hmm. I'm just reading Justin's questions. And, David, this will kind of be helpful to you, too. Let's talk about this. Well, you asked, it looks like three questions here, Justin. What do angel investors look for in startups beyond the potential for financial returns? And then how do angel investors typically like to be involved with the startups, like what level of involvement? And then how should entrepreneurs approach negotiation with angels to ensure a fair and productive outcome for both parties? Those are all great questions, right? You're basically giving me the outline for my next book. So that's cool. So let's see if we can do one of those and see if that will we'll get things started here. And then I have a question for you too, but where would you want to start?
Uh-oh.
No, you're fine. I can hear you. I'm just waiting. Which question would you like to start with?
We can start with the first question.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess, aside from just getting a positive return on investment, what are they looking for, I guess? Yeah.
Well, it differs every time, right? But angel investors, there's a couple different kind of angel investors. The easy kind is friends and family who just love you and they are not too worried about the money, right? And they're just trying to support you. A real angel investor, somebody who does a lot of this, and they're looking for a financial return mostly. But like you said, a lot of people are looking for more than that potentially. And that usually is something that either excites them or is a strategic fit for their other business operations. So a lot of times on Shark Tank, I see companies hooking up with the sharks, basically, because those people have expertise, right? Like if a consumer product and one of the sharks has a consumer product distribution background, or they might be a real estate person and your product is a real estate service, that kind of thing, right? But the other piece that's underestimated, and this might be what you're driving at, is a lot of angel investors are actually, they're kind of bored, right? They're looking for something entertaining that fits their interest and they want to help. Like, I do this because I want to help. Most angel investors are not as financially driven as, say, a venture capital firm is, because a venture capital firm is using somebody else's money, like institutional money, and their job as a fiduciary is to get the maximum return and, you know, check all the boxes correctly, and that's super. But angels, they're kind of like, a lot of us are like investing when we're not playing golf, right? So it's like, what's something cool we can do? And here's the young guy, Justin. He's got a cool idea. He's got a team. Things are happening. Oh, maybe I could be, you know, helpful and also maybe get invited to some cool parties, you know, that kind of thing. So there's definitely a personality fit aspect to it. And I would encourage everybody, whether it's a Mark Cuban level investor or somebody smaller like me or just your aunt or uncle, you know, find people that you can vibe with, you know, that you can hang out with for years, because angel investors are in early and the typical startup takes many years to get to an exit. And I think that's a really good start, is to figure out if there's a personal fit. And I think that's what the angels are looking for a lot of times in addition to the money. Is that helpful?
That is, yeah. I've been trying to not sound like a robot in my emails, Mark Cuban.
Sure.
And just try to give some of my personality.
Good.
And but yeah, I'm gonna try to do that, emphasize that more, just because. Yeah, I mean, he doesn't need any money from me. I'm a small-time entrepreneur. I'm not raking it in or anything.
Yeah.
Well,
I think that's the right approach. I think that's the right approach because, you know, when I was, your age, it seemed like the big money people were, different somehow. But now I'm kind of more one of those people. It's like, we're just people, man. You know, if you have a cool place to take me to lunch, let's go and have a beer. You know, it's like everybody's looking to live their lives. And I don't know Mark personally, but, you know, given his ownership of sports teams and all the things he's involved, I think he's looking for a good time too. And, he goes to some amazing parties. So maybe he could return the favor, right? you could participate there. But I agree with you. I think I would show some of your personality, be yourself, because again, over the long run, these people are your partners. You're kind of getting married. A lot of angel investments last longer than marriages. So if you can't be yourself, it's going to be an awkward long-term situation. But if you can be yourself, and they offer some money and mentorship and expertise and connections, that's exactly what angels are supposed to do. So I have a question for you too. Can you come on the show again and tell us about being on Shark Tank? That would be really cool. I think a lot of people would dig that. Would you be up for that?
I can. There are some their process is proprietary. So we had to sign some certain NDAs regarding specific processes about being on Shark Tank.
Sure.
But I can speak pretty generally, I think.
Great.
About it, and then also give you some personal experiences too. So
that's exciting. And I know we probably have to wait till after your show airs too, right?
Oh, it's already aired actually.
Oh, it did air.
It aired a month ago.
Okay. Perfect. All right. Well, great. Well, let's reconnect on that.
I want to be able to do this. Yeah.
That's cool. All right. Well, nice to see you, and thanks for showing up. And I hope to see you again at another event real soon. And we'll have if you guys want, tell me in the chat room. If you want to have Justin come back and join us again, hear about the Shark Tank experience, then we'll try to bring him back. Thanks, Justin. Nice to see you. Okay. So it looks like my friend Joe is here. So let's bring. That was cool, though, right? Shark Tank. We're all one degree removed from Mark Cuban now. Okay, so here's an even more impressive guy. This is my friend Joe Daniels, and Joe is here to talk through some legal issues. And let's see, here we go. There he is. Oh, caught him drinking. Okay, hey, Joe.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, nice to see you today. So Joe is coming to us live from Manhattan. He's based in New York City, but he covers startups all over the country and even internationally, I think. So he's got a lot of expertise in early stage financing from all levels and all kinds of businesses. And he's being generous with his time today to maybe take some questions. So we have a few people lined up, Joe, with some specific questions. And we also have some chat room going, as you can see. So thanks for being here. You want to give any more intro on yourself? I kind of gave the quick version. I'm sure I skipped some important points, but how would you like to introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, I'll say a few things about my firm and myself. So I'm with this law firm called Nelson Mullins, and it's about 1,000 lawyers, and we're licensed in 43 states in 30 offices across the U.S., most of the U.S., and I'm the co-chair of our 85 Lawyer Strong Emerging Companies Practice. And what we do is we focus on helping companies and venture funds form to make venture capital investments. And to the companies in successively raising angel and venture capital, strategic and private equity financing, and then helping the companies grow through acquisitions and partnerships and commercial agreements, and then exit through an M&A deal or an IPO. And we're consistently ranked in the top, 10 to 15 law firms in the U.S. in terms of the number of angel and venture capital deals we do on the company side every quarter and every year. And, we've gone as high as, I think, number 8 in the nation. We represent thousands of startups and venture funds. And, for example, in 23, we did about 300 deals for more than $8 billion. And, we're also backed up with 150 merger and acquisitions lawyers and people who do public offerings and things like the de-SPAC, the acquisition of Trump's company that just started listing today. And we actually did that transaction.
Wow.
And we have a 60-lawyer IP group, a specialist in most of the technical areas, including focused on mostly tech and life sciences, but they handle patent, trademark, and copyright prosecution, licensing, and litigation. And then we have over 500 lawyers ready to sue and defend over the U.S. And, I personally have been doing this exact same business for 27 years. I basically joined the group in the Silicon Valley that took Netscape public and sold it to AOL back in the late 90s. And I've represented a bunch of, big, at some point in time, household name tech companies and, many venture and private equity funds and investment banks and IPOs. I've done about 25 IPOs and follow-ons and scores of M&A deals and thousands of finances.
Wow. Okay, so now, guys, you see why Joe's here. And this is the reason I invite Joe. I think the second or third time he's joined us over the years, because not only is he an expert, but he does this every day. And that's the key that a lot of people miss. A lot of early-stage founders will find an attorney, and it's just somebody they happen to know. It might be their uncle or their sister-in-law or something. But that attorney really, they do like divorce law and car accidents. That is not the attorney you want. You want somebody like this guy who does it all day, every day, because he knows the current stuff. He knows the valuations. He knows the other investors. He knows what the current climate is, right, in terms of the latest things you can do to protect yourself and raise money on the best terms possible. So if you don't have a real attorney, like an adult, as I would call, like Joe, it doesn't have to be Joe, but Joe's great and he's a friendly guy. I would recommend that you find one, right? And of course, we'd be happy to introduce you too. So, okay, so let's see. Who wants to come on camera? We've got some, it looks like a bunch of you are backstage, but I don't see any legal questions, guys. We're talking about legal questions. So Tyron or Ian or Sean or Justin or Kingston or May, if you have legal questions, let me know. Otherwise, I'm going to go to the chat room and also to some of the ones that were emailed in. So let me see here. There was one, Joe. Let's see. Where was this one? Or Subasis. Yeah, you're here somewhere, right?
I like that question. What type of revenue do you need to make in your company to get meeting with Joe? So
there you go.
I probably talked to, maybe five startup founder teams a week that have no revenue. Some of them are even pre-product. I'm advising companies from starting with just one person with an idea all the way to a public company. Also, he says, Taylor, Joe is the man. That's also good.
Exactly. All right, so I've got another – that's a good question. And Joe also, him and his firm are generous enough. They often offer deals. I won't get into specifics, but they can help early-stage companies with a discounted package if you still need to incorporate or if you maybe need to defer some fees in a reasonable way, right? He obviously wants to work with real companies, not people who are making shit up. but if you're on the way towards being for real, Joe and his team would be happy to help you. So let's bring on Kingston. Kingston has a question, Joe, that might be useful. Hey, Kingston, nice to see you.
Nice to see you too. Hey, Joe, nice to meet you, and thanks, Scott, for doing this. I just have a question. I asked a bunch of different people before because I'm about to raise a friend and family round. And what happens is there are a lot of people that are not accredited that are really the ones that would be interested to invest into your company. And I've gotten like mixed, answers from different people. So some people are like, you should just take the money. And someone's like, well, you might have some issue down the line on dealing with people that are not accredited. So I just kind of want to see your advice on that and what you think.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is that if you take a bunch of money from what we call it, usually friends and family who are not that wealthy, who are not accredited, then that gives each one of them a right of rescission. Every one of them that's not accredited. That means they can ask for their money back at any time plus interest, or maybe some penalties depending on what state people. So that is a pain in the ass for you. But if you ever think they're going to do that, let you know about some basic facts. So what all the companies out there when they're raising money, selling convertible notes, say it's preferred stock, whatever, they always put a one sentence representation by the investor that person is an accredited investor in the document, right?
Right.
So if all these unaccredited people, nothing about whether or not they are accredited. You have no reason to believe that they're not accredited. And they just sign the document like everybody else and give you the money. then for all intents and purposes, it does appear to you and from anyone looking at the evidence that you that they were accredited when they made the investment. At least that's what you thought, right? And if that's the case, then your risk is if not eliminated, then taken down a lot.
Right. Yeah, I think I heard about that. You could put a statement on the paperwork that they signed to kind of prevent them because you don't know for sure. But I think at the end of the day, if they are going to come after you, right, with a lawsuit, I guess if you make it really big, then it's great. And if you actually don't make it, then it wouldn't matter. I guess that's kind of...
Yeah, if, in other words, if you don't do well and there's nothing to pay them back with, then why would they do anything, right? It will only be where they have some kind of like malice towards you and they want to report you to the government, right?
Great. Thanks for the information. That's great. I think I've heard so many people that are just like money just taking, especially from people that really support you. But I've also, you know, had problems, you know, working with friends and family that have too high of expectations. So it's not really just the money. It's really like your relationship, right? At the end of the day, like how are you going to, you know, go...
Yeah, I mean, if they love you, why would they be suing you? You know, I mean, we're reporting to the cops, right?
That's right.
That's true.
Cool. Great answer. Thank you.
Great, Kingston. Nice to see you. And that's the fact, you know, in America, anybody can sue anybody anytime for anything. So you just relationships are your best bet, right, Joe? I mean, you want to have relationships first, I think.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Then good documents would be helpful.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be sort of the back end. So I see a question there about what step should I take as an F-1 visa holder?
Yes, thank you.
MBA student at NYU Stern.
Yeah.
To legally accept the founding member position with a 35% stake in a deep tech venture builder, which sounds like a pretty cool company that I'd like to represent. I love deep tech. Who doesn't? So, yeah, the bottom line is that you're only, that visa only allows you to be a student at NYU. And I think, but a lot of people do that, and it may entitle you to work for a year, you know, just for equity, maybe not. I don't know. I'm not an immigration specialist, but if you connect with me, then I'll have my immigration partner or you know, colleague answer the question for me.
There you go. And then this is built on, we talked about this one a little before you came on, Joe. I took the question differently earlier, and he's clarified now. So your response is totally right. But I also wanted to clarify, I don't think, and maybe you can help me, Joe, in America, you don't have to necessarily have any kind of status to start a company, right? Starting companies, I think, is America, you can kind of start a company anytime. This isn't like some other countries where you have to file a bunch of stuff and get approved, and right? And am I right?
Yeah. I mean, basically, anybody can form a company in the United States. You don't even have to be in the United States, unless you're Russian. Or somebody else in the sanctions.
There you go. Right. Don't be a terrorist. But other than that, yeah. So if that was part of your question, you clarified. So that's helpful. But for anybody else watching this, like from India, for example, you can kind of just get started here and figure it out along the way. And to be honest, this won't be official legal advice for me and certainly not from Joe, but a lot of times you can get going and kind of sort it out later, right? Because you can spend a lot of time on administrative stuff worrying about that, and you have to do that more in other countries. Here, nobody's going to really care until you start making money or somebody gets hurt, right? So just see what you got and see if customers are interested enough to pay you and you can get something going. You can figure the rest out. At least that's my operating theory, not legal advice and certainly not Joe's advice. All right, so let's try a couple more here. We're getting better questions.
A simple question here. What makes an investor accredited? In the U.S., that just means the person who has $1 million in net worth, excluding the equity in their home, the one they live in, and having a net income, if they're single, of $200K for the past 2 years or $300K for the past 2 years of marriage.
There you go. All right, here's another one. This is fun. Here it comes. Can you provide legal insights on international law for leveraging my startup towards economic and environmental equity in Haiti? That's tough, but the funding part was any LSAT tips.
Yeah, the key to getting a high score on the LSAT is to practice it over and over. Get all the practice tests and take them on a time basis. That's what I did. I got in the top 3% of the nation, which supposedly makes me a genius, but it's really because I just practiced it over and over again.
Yeah. Same here. I did pretty well on the LSAT, and it's all about practice and pattern recognition. here's a more general one, intellectual property, sort of general. I know you're not an IP lawyer, but I think you know enough to offer some advice here, maybe. So, David?
Yeah, so in terms of copywriting, I mean, you can do it whenever you want. You can just email it to a third party who you trust to, later verify that, you know, you're the person that emailed the code to them. And you can trust them to not, you know, do anything bad with it. And then in terms of patents, and of course you can also file the code with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. It's pretty cheap. With patents, I would consult with a patent prosecutor. They're usually going to talk to you for free about, you know, patent filing strategy. And because it's just too complicated to give you an answer to that unless you're an expert.
There you go. Here's another one.
And I have many of those patent prosecutors in my firm.
For sure. LLCs versus C-Corps, S-Corps. I think I know the answer here, but let's hear the official one. There's a lot of confusion on this.
The bottom line is you're going to raise other people's money. If you want to just get into your founder stock low and then sell it high, which is sort of the venture capital model, or that's what, when you're building a tech company or life sciences, usually a consumer company, that's what you'd be seeking to do, because you need to raise the money to scale the company to be big enough to mean anything. You don't want it to be a lifestyle business, but, you know, sort of get in, get out rich, then that would be a Delaware C Corp in every case, because of something called the Qualified Small Business Stock Exemption, which exempts C Corporation stock on sale if the company has less than $50 million in gross assets when you buy the stock and you hold it for 5 years before you sell it.
And this is an important
point. Actually, it's a greater of $10 million bucks or 10 times whatever money you invested in the company. So think about it. Each other person, third party that invests in your company, wants your company to give them the qualified small business stock treatment so they get the exemption as well.
Right. And this is a big one for those of you internationally. This is one of the reasons that American angel investors don't often invest overseas, because that preferred tax treatment that we get doesn't apply if I invest in the UK or Africa or India or something. And it's frustrating sometimes for foreign entrepreneurs. And that's one of the reasons, repeating myself, but that's why you need an attorney here in the States and set yourself up as a Delaware C Corp, because that's what we need to raise the money for you to raise the money properly and have a good exit, like Joe just said. All right. Okay, what else we got here? Let's see.
This one about a startup stock to have nominal value.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
Okay, sure. Here it is.
Yes, an uncapped safe will do that, and a capped safe will do that, because it also has a variable conversion pricing that it's going to issue stock at a price equal to the lower of the rent, the next equity financing round price, and whatever the cap is. So therefore, it doesn't establish what the valuation of the company is. And then yes, convertible debt can do that too. There are such a thing as a fixed price safe or a fixed price convertible note. In those cases, then you have a tougher case that the stock has zero, little to no value. And I assume the purpose of that is so that you can keep granting stock to your team at that nominal value, which is a very valuable thing.
Exactly. Can you maybe do a quick version? I know it's a long topic about safes and pre versus post money. This, as you know, this trips up a lot of people, and it's always a little bit of a moving target. So maybe unpack some of the verbiage here, because Burt D. Baker 1 obviously has a little more sophisticated perspective. It's a great question, but maybe we can back it up a little bit.
Yeah, so a lot of money, probably in the billions, maybe $30 billion is raised in the sale of something called simple agreements for future equity. And that, I think that may even be approaching $70 billion in recent years. And it's a five-page document, and many people will look at it and say, that's just a piece of paper. So why do people invest in those? The main reason why is because it's difficult to set the valuation for a little startup that, maybe doesn't have a product yet, certainly pre-revenue, maybe just has a team and some demonstrated product market fit. Maybe a great investment that many people can identify the value there once they understand it. So that's why you go with a safe or a convertible note. The safe's better for the company generally, and because you're not setting, you don't have to set the valuation. Like I said, it's based on a formula. It converts to the lower of the next equity financed round price and a cap or just at a discount to that next equity financing price. And then the key points on a safe, you know, from the founder or company perspective, is you definitely prefer the pre-money safe from the company side, because if you use a post-money safe, then if you happen to sell like a million in safe at a 5 million cap, and then later on you sell 2 million at a 10 million cap, then the effective pre-money entry point for the first $1 million safe investors was no longer 5, but instead 3, right? Because it includes everything else that came after. And one other thing is that the reason why you might want to have a lawyer look at these things is because we have company favorable forms, whereas Y Combinator form, other forms online are usually investor favorable.
Absolutely, and it's funny because I'm an angel investor. I would only do a post money safe, right? Because I'm not the company side when I'm investing, right?
Well, but if you think about it, Scott, like if you got the pre-money safe at a low enough valuation, then what does it matter?
Fair enough. That's fair. But there's a conflict, I guess, is what we're demonstrating to you guys, right? There's a pre and a post money, and the point of view is different. And that's something you have to learn to live with as a founder, because you have interests aligned, but only to a certain point with your investors, right? They were hoping to support you to make a bunch of money, but at some point when that stock converts, they want as much as possible, and that's their job. But your job, of course, is to keep as much for you and your team. So that's part of the reason that attorneys play an important role in this ecosystem, because they can help not only just interpret the language of all that and explain it, but they can help advocate for you to get a fair deal. And most investors are not looking to screw you, but they're trying to get a fair deal from themselves. And of course, people may have different opinions on what's a fair deal, right? And that's where, again, people like Joe can help. Cool.
I like that question about, like, how do you keep your ideas?
Yeah, all right, let's do that.
You need confirmation, but do I show up to an incubator with an NDA? So,
yeah.
The bottom line is that there are trade secrets, things that are, have independent economic value as an idea. You want to protect those, because the minute you publish them to anyone, even one person, it's no longer a trade secret, and you don't own it. And you want to protect those things with an NDA. And to the extent that people will actually agree with you and sign an NDA, then that's great. But usually accelerators, incubators, VCs, those people, they just get so many business plans and so many ideas, they never sign an NDA. It's impossible for them to guarantee they're not going to violate one of them.
There you go. Yep, good point. Here's another one. This is a common one I think could be helpful to people, Joe, if you don't mind. Nabil's asking about using a service first, but what should they be careful about? Because I know this, you know, right? There's LegalZoom and Stripe Atlas, and a lot of folks claim to do this for you just perfectly, but I'm sure you've seen some times when it hasn't worked out so well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why this software is so poorly designed, because if I was going to actually do this myself, I would probably make it work, but it just doesn't seem to ever work. I mean, I always run into founders who said, I use Stripe Atlas. I've never heard of Doula, so therefore that might just be absolutely terrible. I have no idea. Could also be the best thing ever. But what happens is that it seems like the founder will like half complete the process, or have at the end of the day only have half the documents they need, and then they have to go to somebody like me to really finish it up right as they're raising money, because the investors want to see the data, and they know that their documents are not necessarily all together. And frankly, my formation package is generally about the same price as any of these companies. And with us, everybody's going to know. You're going to know for sure that we get it done right.
There you go. Yeah, and I'll also add, a lot of those formation companies, they will offer a low price and then upsell you, right? Because it's whatever, it's only $400 to get started, but then there's this thing and that thing, and you need a registered agent, you need you want a copy of it, and each of those is an extra $50, $100.
Yeah.
And it's pretty soon, no surprise, they're making money, that's fine, but no surprise, it's everybody's, it's always, do you want fries with that, right? They're always telling you a little more. And so I would just be careful, because you might be better off just biting the bullet and doing it right from the first.
I'm still here, I'm just going to turn this thing on.
Okay, cool. Let's see. I was looking at here. Yeah, Taylor had a question about LLCs versus conversion here. He's got an LLC, he or she, I'm not sure, I don't know you, Taylor, but can I convert an LLC to a Delaware C Corp? I know the answer is yes, but then the second part of that, maybe Joe could speak about transferring assets to the newly formed C Corp. Is that a thing, Joe?
Yeah, I'm not sure about Nevada, but a lot of states have a little conversion statute, so you can just convert that LLC directly into a Delaware C Corp for a couple $100 in a one-page form that you file in Delaware. Which is a heck of a lot easier than documenting the transfer of the assets. And then in many situations, the assets that you think are owned by the LLC maybe are not. For example, if you've never signed an operating agreement or you never signed some kind of document that assigned all the IP that you created when you're coding or designing your company in the beginning, and that means all that IP is actually in your head or owned by you. And so it's often more efficient to just shut down the LLC, form a new Delaware C Corp, and then start all the paperwork new, you know, with that. It just depends on the facts and circumstances.
And I'll say as an investor, it's an important point and a good question, because one of the things that we find most often in due diligence when looking at early stage companies is that they don't have all the signed IP transfer agreements from their team. So you might have people that work with you that haven't actually signed paperwork. And you kind of need everybody to sign that, because otherwise we're not sure who owns the code. And I'm talking mostly about software here, but it can apply in a lot of different contexts. And if you have contractors, either domestically or certainly overseas, like, we need to see all that stuff buttoned down, because you've all heard those stories. Like, you know, suddenly a new founder of Facebook pops up years later and says, you know, hey, I worked for 3 weeks on this back in 2007, and I own, you know, 10% of Facebook, and that's the kind of thing that nobody wants to have happen. So locking that stuff down is important, and it's a good question. Okay, so we got a couple more people backstage. If you've got legal questions, let me put up that URL again. You can put them in the chat room here. Obviously, we're doing fine with that. But if you want to come on camera, we'll be happy to have you talk face-to-face with our friend Joe. He'll be here for a few more minutes, and then we'll get back to some of the pitches and the usual stuff we do, more general questions about fundraising. And if you want to ask a legal question, that's how you would do it. Go over to founderofficehours.com and turn on your webcam, and then let me know what you want to talk about, and we'll bring you on. So, okay, so what else we got in the chat room here? Let's see. Okay, Joe, can maybe tell people how they can contact you, because I don't have room to put that right into the chat. But what's the easiest way? I put your firm's name up there. What's your preferred contact method?
I just typed it in my name, which is, you know, at the top left and above my picture or whatever. I don't know if that's what shows the whole thing. It's basically joe.daniels@nelsonmullins.com. And I don't know how to – can I actually add to the chat?
You're in the backstage chat, so they're not seeing it publicly. Why don't you say that again, and I will type it. Joe.Daniels@NelsonMullins.com. Hey, look at that. How's that for good service? This guy's giving you his personal email address. Okay, next we'd like your cell phone number and your home address.
No.
Okay, so there's Joe's email address, and Nelson Mullins is the firm. They have a website, obviously. You can learn more about it, and if you're just coming in late, I suggest rewinding about 25 minutes on this recording and hear Joe introduce all the things that they do, because they do all kinds of stuff. Very impressive firm, 1,000 attorneys, and they cover all sorts of stuff. Joe's an expert mostly in venture capital and fundraising, but they also have intellectual property folks, and I think he said 500 litigators. So if you get in trouble, they'll go after you. Bad guys for you. Pretty impressive. Let's try this one. Ian's got a question. Ian, I think you're from the UK, right? So you might get a little bit different answer here in the US, but it's about registering your company. Ian, hold on. I'll bring you on camera. You're backstage, right? Here, go ahead and talk. That's more fun anyway.
Hello, hello. Can you hear me well?
Yes, we can. Nice to see you.
Hi, how are you doing? Hi, Scott. Hi, Joe.
Hey. So the short answer, you know, what I usually tell people in accelerators and stuff is that whenever you have more than one person involved, or whenever you want to avoid personally being liable, right? So okay. If you have a startup and you, you know, license out some co-working space, or you contract with some, like a team of developers to pay them on a monthly basis, let's say net 30 invoice for developing some software, genomic sequence, or whatever it is, then you know, somebody's going to owe them that money, right? If they go off and do that work, and they will sue you sometimes for it. So what if you whatever business you're starting can't raise money, can't pay the bill. So it's best to put all that liability inside of a corporation or another company so that you're not liable. If they agree to have to contract with you to do work with this company, and unfortunately you can't raise money, to pay, then that becomes a liability only of that company. If you do it right, if you paper it right. And then with the what other person involved concept, like a co-founder or just an advisor, an intern, employee, a contractor, when things are that small, people are sharing ideas pretty freely. Basically there's a lot of potential for disputes. And if you don't have it documented in writing, that is who owns what equity, who owns the IP, who's going to get paid what, if anything, then people can just make that stuff up and, you know, send demand letters and sue you. And it can just be a big, people don't get along generally. So.
Oh, yes. Past experience says it all. Well, yeah, thank you for that one.
And Joe, would that answer be different in the UK, do you think? I mean, you're talking pretty high level.
I'm afraid not, yeah. I mean, they may actually be more contentious.
I bet they would say the same about us, right?
Yeah, they would. Yeah.
That's right. Great. Good to see you, Ian. Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we got one backstage. Miranda says she has a question, but she can't be on camera as she has kids running around. But she'd like to know what pro rata right. Can you give an example about pro rata rights? And Miranda, thank you for that. And you actually emailed that in earlier. I didn't know you were here. So good. Thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah, so the formulas can be different, but what this is when an investor invests, let's say, in a safe round, convertible note, or even preferred stock, they often negotiate a right to buy a share of any future offering, or maybe just the very next offering. That's better for the company because then they don't have a continuing right. And usually when investors have that right, it ends up in the founders and the management team, the people who hold common stock, getting further diluted, right? Because usually the lead investors in the future rounds where the pro rata rights holder would have a right to participate, negotiate their own valuation and how much they're going to invest. And then, so therefore, if you have to increase the amount that has to be invested, then you have to decrease the premium, right? And so therefore, most people only give the pro rata rights to people who invest a fair amount of money. What's a fair amount of money? It depends on the size of your company and everything, but you know, I probably wouldn't want to give it up for less than, let's say, 250K or half a million.
Well, there you go. So that hopefully that gives you an idea, Miranda. It's a common thing, but it's definitely a negotiated point. This is not an.
Well, yeah, you wanted an example. I'll try to give you an example. So if you invest $100,000 in a $1 million safe financing, and that converts into 2% of the company in the next equity financing, that means you'd have the right to buy 2% of that round.
There you go. And hopefully that's helpful, Miranda. If you can chime in again, I know your kids are running around. We got another question from Shadab from Bangladesh. So Shadab, I'm going to bring you on camera. In the meantime, folks, I put my LinkedIn URL in the chat, and I'm sure you can find Joe on LinkedIn as well if you want to connect. Happy to help you guys out. Hey, Shadab, nice to meet you.
Hi there, Scott. Hey there. Thank you for bringing me on. Should I just repeat my question?
Sure, yeah, please, go ahead.
Okay, super. So just a 30-second backdrop. I just finished my MBA from IE Business School. I went in there for my startup idea, went through the MBA, came in, the project came in second on Venture Day, which is one of the biggest startup competitions hosted by business school, so that was great validation. The final project was also this project, and now that it's over, it's time to fundraise and all these questions, right? How do you fundraise? Where to register the company? So one of the things that I faced in the last few weeks was because of where I am, Bangladesh, European investors weren't very interested because they don't know the market, they don't know anything. So the question of registering the company comes up, not only in terms of getting started, but also for credibility. Should I register the company in Dhaka, Singapore, Delaware? When do I register? Now, while I'm just building my MVP and I have nothing? Or do I register when I have some traction or when I get an investment? So two related questions, kind of like when to register and where to register in my context. Thank you.
Great. So I think a lot of the, you have some early stage funds in Europe. They have venture funds, but there's not many that are later stage. So it's generally hard, especially for someone outside of Europe, because they tend to favor more local business. And sometimes there's all kinds of government subsidies too, and government investing in local European startups, but not here in Dhaka, or Bangladesh. So the trend that I always see is that when a company is trying to raise venture capital, they incorporate as a Delaware C corp, and then they may have a subsidiary in Dhaka or Bangladesh, but and I've represented companies, a bunch of companies out of India, companies in Pakistan, almost all the operations except for one person who's doing some management stuff, or high level architecture is like in the U.S., right? Or maybe nobody in the U.S. You don't have to have anybody. And although if you are raising money from a U.S. Venture firm or even angels, the more revenue you have in the States, the more operations you have in the States, the more probably the more compelling that's going to be, right? Or just, business plan that talks about how you're going to expand into the U.S., because it's a big market, right?
Absolutely. And the choice of Singapore versus Delaware or elsewhere?
Yeah, people in South Asia like Singapore because there is a tax rate between Bangladesh and India and Pakistan and Singapore. This allows investors in the Singapore company to have more certainty as to how they're going to get taxed. Because most of the other countries in the world do not have a tax treaty with India, Bangladesh, or Pakistan. I don't know why. I think you guys are stubborn over there about that tax treaty stuff. Don't know why. I don't know. I mean, we have a tax treaty with everybody else, pretty much. But,
right. No, it's amazing. I mean, you gave such a specific answer. I've asked this question at so many webinars, but you gave that very specific knowledge.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just because, I've taken an Indian company public, and the way we had to do it through a Mauritius intermediary company and a British Virgin Islands holding company. Because, it's just anybody who invests internationally does not want to invest directly into a Bangladeshi or Indian company because
exactly.
They, as far as they're concerned, they may be taxed by both countries, the one they live
absolutely.
In.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the follow-on question, I'm sorry, was when to register the company while I'm building the MVP? In other words, I don't have a product yet. When I get funding or do it right now?
Yeah, the answer to me is still the same. If you are doing all the development over there by yourself and you're not contracting with anyone to do it, promising to pay them, and you're just not worried about having to pay the bill or having them sue you, then no problem. But if you want to limit your liability because you're out there doing deals with all these people, signing contracts and then making them work and everything, then that's when you want to form a company. Or if you have somebody involved, like if you have a co-founder, a couple of co-founders around the world, you agreed to split the equity four ways, you're doing different parts of the work, then you want to get them all signed up to equity and service agreement so it's clear, what the deal is.
Absolutely. Got it. Thank you so much.
Well, there you go. And that's the reason. Thank you. Nice to meet you, Shadab. That's why you hire somebody who really does this stuff, right? There's a lot of people who dance around the topic, but this guy's actually taking companies public out of India. Like that is an uncommon skill set.
I thought that I could do the next wave of a bunch of Indian software companies, but then the Indian government shut down the way that I did it because they want everybody to list over there.
Sure. But having even the awareness of these tax treaties and stuff is not something you're going to get from your uncle, the divorce lawyer, who's helping you incorporate your startup, right? So this is why you go to a professional. So that was a great question, Shadab. Thanks for chiming in from Bangladesh. So, well, Joe, I know we've taken probably about as much of your time as we need, and folks will get on to some of our more general questions as usual and some pitch practice maybe too if we have time. But thank you very much for being here. It's a lot of fun to see you again as usual. Hope to see you in person again one of these days real soon.
Yes, my pleasure. See you soon.
Yes, that was our friend Joe Daniels. Thanks, Joe. All right. So there's Joe, and he's off to go counsel some more startups because that's what he does. All day, every day. So that's the kind of guy you want in your corner, right? So, a respectable person feels like you could really rely on them, right, and have them really in your corner to help figure things out. So thanks to him. And, again, the firm is called Nelson Mullins, and there's a nelsonmullins.com out there, of course. And you can go find Joe. We posted his email address earlier. He'd be happy to hear from you. And like I said, they have some good deals to help early stage companies get going if that's the stage you're at. And if you are on your way to some funding, it's possible, no promises, but sometimes they even defer fees, you know, when so that you don't have to pay it all up front sort of thing, because they're not cheap, right? But you kind of get what you pay for. This is definitely one of those things where you get what you pay for, and you want a guy like that on your side. So, okay, so thank you, everybody. So let's take some more general questions. This will be more like our general office hours, but if any of you have the time, go ahead and reach out to Joe. When you do email him, please say thank you for showing up, because, you know, that recording will now live online and hopefully help some other people as well. And if you're watching this later in the replays, of course, or you watch the replays at all, please like and share. That's what we need to help keep doing this for you, right? I mean, that was a lot of valuable advice. So please like and share and comment. You know, it's the comments that the algorithms really help drive things, I think. So so super cool. And let's see here. Sorry, I'm clicking on all the things I need to show you. Okay, so back to me again. Let's turn on the chat room again. Where's the chat? Okay. And then we've got a couple people backstage. Okay, some of you have been very patient backstage. The chat's going to get in the way if we bring people on. Let's do this. I'm going to take a couple of you live on camera, okay? So let's see. Tyron had a question, and let's see. There's Tyron. Hey, Tyron, nice to meet you. And Shadab, we talked to Sean. Are you around? Or Ian, did you have another question? No, let's see. Let's just get everybody here at the same time, and then we can just hang on a second, guys. Let me get everybody sorted, and we'll and May, if you want to turn on your camera, we'll try to get to everybody. Okay, so somebody's got a lot of background noise. There's like a truck backing up or something. I'm going to try to mute you. Let's see. No, it's not Ian. There, somebody did the right thing there. Thank you. That was helpful. Okay, cool. Hey, guys, nice to meet you. Nice to see you. And just give me the quick 30 seconds of what you'd like to talk. Well, let's start with Ian. So, Ian, did we cover what you wanted to talk about already, or are you good, or do you have another question?
Hi. It was a legal question, but no, I've got two other questions regarding post-MVP.
Okay. All right.
And it's...
What are they? Just really quick.
Would you recommend pre-selling, well, possibly,
uh-huh,
just to get validated by ideas? So, you know, anyone can say, right, yes, this is great, but then they won't buy, right?
Right, right.
So, like, by extra validation, what would you recommend?
Okay.
That's pretty much it.
Okay, we can come back to that. Thank you. And how about, since I have you all on camera, can you give me a thumbs up or smile, look like you're having a good time, so we can share this on social media? You know, that's what we got to do, right, to make this, it doesn't happen unless we take pictures and, you know, look friendly, right? So, cool. Thank you. Okay, so Tyron, how about you? What was on your mind? You're muted, my friend. Uh-oh, still muted. All right, let me go on to May. Hey, May, nice to see you. What's the quick version of your question?
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for building this ecosystem for everyone. I'm actually inspired by you. You know, right now I'm helping some of the founders, especially women, and also minority founders,
great,
to mindfully and respectfully approach investors.
Cool.
You know, I mean, this is a whole like a sales process. So far, I find that those investors are different. You know, I just want to give a much comprehensive picture about how many different types of investors out there. So far, what I've met of many investors, to me, they're just money managers. You know, they're not the decision maker, right?
Right.
They might do a lot of the work to support the final decision.
Okay.
Hold on.
Okay, we'll come back. We'll come back to that, okay? That sounds good. Interesting. And then who do we have here? This is Sean. Hi, Sean. Nice to meet you. What's on your mind today?
Oh, I just had a quick question, but I also had a problem to do a little pitch practice.
Oh, okay. Okay. I don't know if we're going to have time for pitch practice today. I'd like to, but given that we had Joe on, we got 20 minutes or so. Let's see. Let's see what we can do. Oh, there we go. Look at that. It's amazing what this technology can do. It makes me look like I know what I'm doing. Okay, so let's go. Let's come back to these. And then guys in the chat will do that as well. So these folks are all going to go backstage again. And let's start with, Tyron, let's give you another chance. Did you have, no? Okay, Do you want to put it in the sorry, man. That's the internet for you, right? Yeah, frustrating. Okay, well, we'll do the best we can. I think you put something in the chat. Yeah, you did. Okay, well, I'll do that. Let's do that, and I'll May and Ian will come back to you, and then we'll get to other chat folks. And here's Tyron. All right, well, you can nod along, and I'll try to answer your question. So Tyron said in the chat, as a person who's trying to start a new business, trying to receive business credit or business funding fast, should you be giving the banks your personal info? That's a good question. I'll be honest, I don't know the right answer, but my guess is you'd have to. I mean, if they're going to give you money, they're going to want to know everything, right? And especially if you don't have a credit history established, or at least for this company, it doesn't have a history, they're probably going to want you to guarantee it personally. So they're going to require that. And they might even, like a lot of loans, you know, you guys have seen these like fake loans where they like say, hey, we'll give you a loan of whatever, you know, $10,000. But then it turns out first you have to put like $20,000 in their bank, and they're basically loaning you back your own money. I mean, so, you know, I guess that has its uses, because then you can say you had a loan and make the payments, and it can build a new credit history. So maybe that's useful. But if they're doing that, they're definitely going to want all your personal info. Yeah, I think that's a thing. If it's somebody that seems kind of shady, though, I mean, I can read the subtext of your suspicion here, right? I mean, if they're, yeah, I would be careful. But especially for a new company, it's hard to get anything going unless you guarantee it personally. Usually the easiest way that I've seen has been to get a credit card in that company's name, and then you have to sign for that credit card like it's kind of joint, like it's a company name, but you personally also. And that is a way to start building some credit. And again, it might be a small, you know, might be only $500 credit limit or something, but you know, you start somewhere. Not much you can do with $500, but that would be my suggestion. And yeah, I think that they're probably gonna want your, you know, name, social security number, and probably a blood sample, right? So that's just how it works. So did that answer the question? Close enough. Well, nice to meet you. I hope to see you again. Sorry, your mic wasn't working, but come on back again next time. Cheers. Okay, so that was our new friend Tyron. And then let's see, Ian, we'll talk about MVPs and Sean. Okay, let's Sean, we'll try to do a little pitch thing at the end. So let's talk to May. So May had a sort of a larger picture question, I think, about types of investors. Go ahead, May.
Yeah, so far I'm meeting some investors who have a family, you know, they have own money to fund, mm-hmm. and then they're the decision maker. So now if they're the decision maker, you have a way to approach them. And also some of the investors, they're just like, you know, GSE, HPS, you know, they're just very young MBAs, you know, they're just like a job, you know, so feel like a B2B sales eventually, you know, so. So when they talk, you know, they're not talking about, so basically how they make sure that they are alignment, you know, whatever their interest is, in aligned with the money, you know, mm-hmm. intention. I think what I'm talking about is the money's intention. Because the money intention goes to many people. So I try to make the connection.
Okay. So what's the question?
The question is just give me a general idea about the investors you are you see. You know, some of the investors they invest other people's money,
mm-hmm.
but some investors they invest their own money.
Yes.
You know, or is there any other type of investors?
Okay, that's fair. No, that's a good question. And I think you found the biggest distinction is those who invest their personal money versus those who are working for a firm or a company investing third party money. That's mm-hmm. that's the big divide for sure. I guess to put some more, unpack that a little more, I'd say the continuum is from personal to institutional. I'm holding my hands out, but you can't see them. I'm trying to draw a continuum. On the left, personal is friends and family. You know, your family loves you. They may not understand the idea so much, but they have faith in you and that you're going to work hard. And so they might put some money into whatever you're doing just because they believe in you. And that's usually small amounts of money, and you could call that an angel investor, although these days it's really friends and family. A lot of the other most popular way to fund things, of course, is with your own money and even credit cards. And that's, you know, if that's what it takes, sometimes that's what you need to do. Then the next step is the more popular angel investor, which would be somebody like me. And I'm investing my, yes, it's my own money, but I'm doing it on a financial basis. I don't know you already, you as a startup founder. And I often work with other groups of angels or syndicates or clubs who invest. For example, I'm part of TCA Venture Group, which is probably the one of, if not the largest venture group, angel group in America. Anybody that's looking for money, you can actually, let me put up that, I've got a link to that page. If people are looking for money, that's a thing we always, a question we always get, then that's a page for that. But anyway, so angel groups are, that's personal money, but a little more formally organized, and there's a due diligence process, and we're really looking for return on our money. But also, like I talked about earlier in the program, we are looking maybe to help or give back or be entertained. There's a kind of a personal relationship. Next is what you're, the classic is the venture capital model, and that money is raised by third parties. Small funds may be often personal money, or me and a bunch of rich friends each put in a couple hundred grand and we have $1 million and that's a fund, but it's still kind of angel-ish because it's personal money. Mm-hmm. But then the next step would be in real VC, which is money that's raised from true institutions, and that tends to be insurance companies, banks, pension funds, university endowments, and those firms have billions of dollars, and they might allocate a small percentage of that towards venture investments. And so say they have a $50 billion endowment, and they put $1 billion of it into what they call risk assets, and they take that billion and they might put half in like real estate, half in Bitcoin, or a quarter in Bitcoin and a quarter in venture. So they have $250 million maybe, and then they'll split that across two or three or 50 different funds with different investment theses. So there might be one for early stage aerospace, another for mid-stage B2B software companies, another one to support women and minority founders, and you know, they split it up like that. And then the other category that you haven't talked about is lenders. And most of the world actually runs on loans more than venture debt, mm-hmm. venture equity type transactions. And there's a lot of people in between on that space as well, people that are lenders who make loans, but it's really collateralized by money you already have in their bank, or you put your home, like you put your home as a collateral, things like that. And there's lots of in-betweens as to how much personal recourse there is and how much they charge, and maybe they'll take some of it in equity. All of these things are negotiated contracts, essentially. So anything is possible, basically. But that's kind of the broad steps. Is that kind of what you were looking for?
Oh, thank you so much. That's exactly what I was looking for.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool.
Even that's such a big picture, so I don't have to figure out anything.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, nice to see you again. All right, so that was our friend May. And if you have more, it looks like people aren't chatting so much, but if you do, we'll put them up on the screen. Shadab has a great question. Shadab, okay, well, are you still backstage? It looks like we'll come back to you. Let's talk to Ian again. Ian had a question, product market fit, I think. Hey, Ian.
Hi, can you hear me again?
Yes.
All good?
Yeah, MVPs it was actually, wasn't it?
Yeah, we spoke about last meeting,
uh-huh.
about user feedback a month later, now we, you know, got to go forward.
Great.
So I've got roughly more or less four long-form feedback surveys mm-hmm. from the testers.
Okay.
It's clear to us that, you know, they want this solution, what we have to offer.
Congrats.
But now, is this risk of, you know, going doing further development and then leading to not purchase it? Is there any way we can bypass it and, like, you know, validate it with money, for example? So maybe they pay to join a wait list. So what would you say? Do you know what I'm trying to say, bro? Or try to re-explain myself?
You're trying to take a baby step past the survey, but not a full sale. Is that kind of the idea?
No. So we collected the survey already.
Yeah.
We have all of that done.
Yeah.
Now we just have to refine our tool based on the user feedback. Or they said, well, they would want
okay.
the next update.
Yes.
But then, is this risk of building it and then just not willing to purchase it?
Mm-hmm.
So is there any way we could, like, you know, validated whether they would, like, you know, to see that they would lock in with this tool?
Yeah, okay, sure. You can charge them. I mean, this is a negotiation, classic negotiation, right? If you want it, you got to pay for it. Oh, well, sorry, it's going to take us 6 months to build it, right? So It's kind of up to you. That's a legitimate thing. If they really see the need, I think you can ask that. Of course, that might be a little off-putting, so maybe you don't charge them 100%. Or like you, I think you said a second ago, they put down a deposit. That seems like a reasonable approach. You know, let's just say it's $1,000, right? And they put down $250 or $500, or maybe it's $200 a month for the 6 months. Or, you know, I think all of those are reasonable approaches. It's really a question of how hungry are they for this solution. And
yeah.
If...
one question.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention this one part.
Mm-hmm.
So last month, I'm sure you don't remember, but the promise with our users was you get this tool for free, and listen, you provide us feedback, and for your long-form feedback that you provide us, you know, the detailed analysis, what was good, what needs better, they will receive lifetime access.
Oh, lifetime. That's a good deal. Okay.
And then this call, I think that they might be slightly misunderstood what I meant by lifetime access.
Okay.
So is there any way, you know, so maybe we could like do a pre-sale,
mm-hmm.
but also to the lifetime access. Does that make any sense what I'm trying to say?
You're trying to limit the lifetime access then and still get them to pay? Is that what you're driving at?
No. So you would like to do some sort of pre-sale, but they will also receive a lifetime access. So would it be ethical for them to pay the percentage amount of the initial lifetime access costs? So let's say the lifetime access costs, what we will calculate would be $2,000.
Okay.
They would pay $100, and that would like, you know, tell us that yes, they're willing to go further.
Yeah.
Would that be ethical?
Well, it depends on what promise you made them. I thought you said earlier that if they did the survey, they get lifetime access for free. So if
And last question, how should I do the equation to calculate, you know, the lifetime access? I've used ChatGPT to give me an overview, but for me to calculate operational costs and how much will it cost to develop it, but I don't know these.
Yeah.
So what would you say?
Well, I don't know, right? I don't know the business and I don't know what it costs. But I think what you might be reaching towards is, let me offer another insight for the next step, which is lifetime access deals can get you in trouble, right? Because lifetime means lifetime, right? And what if you go out of business, or what if you turns out that the service you're offering isn't worth $1, it's worth $1,000 and you way undercharged, right? That kind of thing. So
exactly.
Here's what people do, or they try to do, which is lifetime access. You have to look at exactly what you are. I mean, to be ethical, right? Jokers and cheaters can do whatever they want and they'll screw people. We're trying not to do that, right? So to do this the proper way, I think, which is still ethical and the right way to do things, if you look at the lifetime access offer you made and look at what was the state of the product at that point, or what it was you promised. Usually, so let's say that's whatever, 5 bullet points. It's going to do this and this and this and this. That's what you offered. I kind of think you need to give that at whatever price, either it was free or whatever you said it was going to be. I think that's, in legal terms, it's an oral contract. It's probably not enforceable, but whatever. You know, that's, as an ethical person, that's what you want to do, and that's what I hear you saying. So I agree with that. So here's how you try to, what you do is you try to bound that and say it's only these 5 bullet points for the free lifetime access offer. And most products evolve, right? They get bigger. They improve. You turn out that you're adding more features and upgrades. And so what you end up doing, it's still not the politest thing to do, but I think it's more ethical as you say, yes, you do have lifetime access, but it's only to these original 5 points. And since then,
yeah.
We've added this and this and this. And now the price is, you know, double or whatever it is, right? Some higher number. And so maybe they don't pay 100%, but they at least pay the difference from free to, you know, half of that or something.
So you're saying pretty much you could offer two types of lifetime access, one for free where you get the very beginning core features, but then the other one where they can pay and they get extra benefits such as, you know, premium customer service, is how we're trying to...
Yeah, that's the kind of vibe I'm saying, yeah. And I would just be careful. Lifetime access is a big deal. I mean, it's a great selling point, right? But just be careful, you know? I don't know what else to say. Be careful, because if you're going to be ethical, you need to take note of every person who converts, what they were sold on? You know, what did this website or app or whatever it was or letter, what did it say? You know, what were the bullet points? And track that, because then every time you add something, you're going to potentially create a trail of people who, you know, if you have 17 upgrades and you have 1,000 customers, there's going to be this weird combination of, well, 217 people have this set and 300 of them get this set, and then there's four that back from the beginning that only get this set, and they're all going to have different price points, and it's going to turn into a nightmare for you just administratively, right?
I see.
And billing-wise, yeah. Right? So that's just more to think about, right? No right or wrong answers, but I appreciate your emphasis and attempt to do the right thing.
Exactly, yeah. But that's the biggest worry. We're trying to grow it to a $100 million exit. Uh-huh. But then my worry was, you know, they'll come back to us saying they only get this, they only get that, blah, blah, blah. Well,
yeah.
You've explained it well, so thank you.
Okay, cool. All right, well, nice to see you again. And I'm glad you're making progress. Good for you, man. Get out there and talk
thank
to
you.
People.
See you next month.
All right, super. That's definitely one of the things that we encourage. If you haven't joined this program before, the number one advice today was a lot of legal stuff, super valuable. But in terms of growing a company, it's really about engaging with the customers. If you're not talking to customers constantly and you know, creating dialogues and getting feedback, then you're not only missing an opportunity, you're setting yourself up for failure. You need to get outside feedback. Anybody that thinks they know the whole world and every bit of critique and fail feedback in their head is psycho. So the world is more complicated than that, man. So, okay, so let's bring, let's see, who we had backstage still. So Shadab had a follow-up question. Shadab, I want you were following up on Ian. Let's do that. And then, Sean, I will get to you, I promise. Yeah, it sounded like a good question. What did you want to build on?
Okay. So my first question was to bootstrap or not to bootstrap. So in the conversation with angel investors, I pitched to them the like the pitch. I've already said, you know, where I am is an issue. But they themselves encouraged that, you know, since it's a healthcare project, it's a long-term project, try to preserve your equity, try to get that MVP and get some traction. And we will be speaking with you differently. So the terms we're offering right now will be better for you. And that's better for the long term. So that's actually feedback from angel investors I've pitched to. Do you agree to it? And if so, what are some resources, non-dilution resources that may be available that I can explore for the first fund to build up the MVP and get that bit of traction?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's great that your investors are helping you like that, right? Because a lot of investors easily could say, this guy's got a good idea. You know, we're going to get some really good terms and screw him, right? We take half the company for a very small amount of money and he doesn't know any better. Yay, you know? And that's obviously not a good long-term strategy, but there are people like that out there. So I'm glad they're advising you that. So yes, to unpack that a little, I think what they're saying is that investors, we're looking at a company, you know, as a pie. And how big is this pie? What's the valuation of that company? Is it a, you know, it's not much yet. It's an early stage company. They don't have much. But given the team and the idea and the market and the research, whatever they've done, you know, this company might be worth $1 million or $2 million. So let's say it's $1 million just for round numbers. And we want to put in 100 grand and take roughly 10%. That's not exactly right because there's dilution and so forth, but whatever. You know, but what they're saying is, you know, Shadab, I think you've got something here. So why don't you do some more? And then the valuation will be $2 million. So we will actually get less, but we might put in as much or even more money because now we can see that you've made some progress. And that's what investors are looking for. From our point of view, it's really about risk, right? This is, especially for Angel, this is my money. Like if I give it to you, then I don't get to buy a new car, right? I'm not that rich and I'm not like buying 7 cars a year, right? So these are honest choices for founders, for investors. And we want to partner with founders. And so I think what they're saying to you, and I think it's a generous and correct point of view, which is, hey, man, why don't you make this happen a little more? That will de-risk it for us, and then we can support you better because we know you better. You've kind of proven this a little bit, and then it means that you'll get a better deal as well. So I fully support that, and I think that's what most good investors would do. Did that answer the question?
And hence, what can be some non-dilution resources I can explore out in the world, if you can point
sure.
to it?
Well, non-dilutive capital is investors' favorite thing. And to those of you who are new to this world, non-dilutive means money that comes in that doesn't take stock ownership. And in the U.S. at least, I don't know about Bangladesh so much, but in the U.S. the number one source of non-dilutive capital tends to be grants from the government. In the U.S. we have all the different kinds of grants, the SBIRs and SBA programs, and there's the Defense Department, and there's all different kinds of ways. And if the states have grants, lots of different ways to get non-dilutive capital. And those are basically gifts of tax money that come into the company. And they grow the company without taking stock ownership, which is fantastic. So it's free development money. So in the States, I would point you towards these kind of resources. But as I understand, you're in Bangladesh, so I don't know if there's something.
Very limited opportunities. Yeah. So we have this one government competition that happens once a year, and that's 100K. So that's great for a Bangladeshi third world startup. But, that's just one opportunity once a year, very competitive. I think, being where I am, third world country healthcare, maybe impact, I've heard that there are angels or VCs who impact invest, but I don't know who they are or where to look for. So
sure.
You could just point me.
Yeah. Well, if only it were that easy. So let me back up. So impact investors, I think that's correct. The definition for folks who don't know, impact investors are those who invest in companies and they want a financial return, but they're also interested in the impact that that investment makes. So they might be funding projects for minorities or for women entrepreneurs or inner city or rural, or maybe it's a cause like curing cancer or it's defense. They see some way to impact the world. They're helping veterans. So they want their money to do well, but they might give up a little bit on the upside because it's doing something positive and having an impact on the world. So for a project like yours, yes, impact is a thing I would be looking at, yes. A couple tricks. So impact means different things to different people. Google is your friend here. I would look everywhere you can and just see and use that. That is the buzzword. I will confirm that's the buzzword you want to use. So yes, I would do that. There's also, I'm trying to find the URL if I can put it on the screen. There you go. I'll talk about that in a second, but the other thing is if you're in the U.S., the opportunities will be very different than in Bangladesh because, like we talked about with Joe, people may or may not want to invest in a company depending on where it's headquartered, mostly because of tax reasons, as well as time zones, as you well know. So there's that. But because this is an ongoing problem, we built something, and this is my entrepreneurial side showing, and I put that on the screen, and this is a URL you should all check out, Startup Investors. It's got a very fancy name, startupinvestorsdirectory.com. And just like it says, it's a new investor search engine to find the right investors. So I spent a couple years and a bunch of my own money, and we built this website to help you guys. And it's a search engine. It has 3,000, maybe 4,000 investors, and it has 48 categories, more categories than any other resource that I know of. And you can search for investors, specific investors that are investing in Black entrepreneurs, Latino entrepreneurs, minority entrepreneurs, immigrants, first generation, rural, plus all, of course, of all the different sectors, aerospace and software and healthcare and med tech and international and et cetera. So anyway, that's an idea as well. And there's a promo code there on the screen that might be helpful to you. Now, this doesn't have all the answers any more than anybody else does, but it's a place to start because this is a question I get so often. Like, I have an idea, where do I go? So,
thank you so much, Scott.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Nice to meet you. I hope to see you again. It sounds like you're on to something cool, man. Good for you. And come say hi on LinkedIn. I'm happy to connect. I can't really keep up with all the messages, but I'm happy to connect with people. If you haven't said hello on LinkedIn yet, please do. And okay, so now Sean, are you still around? I know you've been waiting patiently here. I think you wanted to try something. I'm sorry, I forget even what it was. What were we going to do, Sean?
Oh, I was just going to do a quick pitch, but I didn't realize that you normally do consulting for that.
Oh no, that's fine. No, we do this sorry if I confuse people. No, we do it here all the time. Happy to give feedback live. The URLs that I was putting on the screen a minute ago are more. If you want me to I will personally make a review, and that's more like for deck here, this one. This one is even better.
Right.
Yeah. So we can actually look, we'll do a video of me actually going through it. And there's also calls. I just did one yesterday. If people want, if if it's an event where it will help other people publicly, I'm happy to do it now with you, and then everybody can enjoy and benefit. If it takes me personally out of my schedule, then I have to charge money. That's all that is. So those are services that are – I prefer this. So whatever you'd like, either way, if that's helpful to you.
Okay. So should I just do like a 1 or 2 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, cool. So I run a company called Unlock Investments.
So actually, I'm sorry. You have a tremendous amount of background noise. It's feedback, and do you have a headset or a microphone you can use? The speakers. Yeah, let's try that. Let's see if that let's see if we can. Not yet. Keep trying.
Is that better?
There. Maybe. I can hear you, but still talk a little more. You got to fix that. Okay. Well, let's do it next time. Happy to do that. And if you're having that kind of feedback, you should test it with your friends and family, because you do not want to be doing that during a pitch. So there's some free feedback. A better microphone. Sorry about that, Sean. He was waiting this whole time. And while we're at it, I would, one of my easiest recommendations is, of course, here's the link if you guys want to work with me. But like I said, I do most of my work at events, and I'm happy to engage at events because it helps more people at once. But one of my best recommendations for everybody, and this is really easy, is this. Here comes a Sirius microphone. These are like $80, I think, on Amazon. This is a podcast microphone and has all kinds of little settings and stuff. Studies have shown, and this is hard to believe, studies have shown that the better people can hear you, they will think you are 19% smarter. Seriously, that's a study. I can find it and show it to you. You will be 19% smarter if people can hear you better. So don't assume that people can hear you unless you test it. And I've been podcasting for years, right? So that's why I have this. But I suggest all of you, as you saw just there with Sean, I'm not picking on Sean, but any of us, that can happen. And it's even happened to me on previous broadcasts. You can see on YouTube, there's old recordings, where I'll forget to turn on this microphone, and it just sounds like crap. All of you, pay attention to your microphones. In this Zoom world that we live in, the microphone is way more important than you think. So that's an easy one. That's an easy win. So, and Tyron says, yeah, next time. I was not directed at you. but fair point. Okay, so I think we're about to wrap up here, just about on time for a change. A couple offers for you, just because I love you. We have this National Startups Directory, like we talked about. That's this guy. If you want to go list there, this is literally free, trying to help you get online. I don't know if that will focus, but get online and put your startup in a friendly format so that investors can find you, right? You can do a lot of work, but if nobody knows you're there, it's like a tree falls in the forest. Who's going to invest in you if they don't know you're there? I also do a lot of public speaking. I'm looking to get my travel schedule for the coming year going, especially internationally if you're having events. And it's someplace fun I haven't been, I'll come for free. And then we want to say thanks again to our friend Joe. Joe was here, as you saw. And if you just came late, then please rewind. He had a lot of good advice. Hey, we have a private LinkedIn group that you can join as well. It's linkedin.com/group/14309041. That's a real sexy handle there. But if you want to join us on LinkedIn, you can come in there and post and talk to each other. Because, again, I'm not trying to own this situation. I'm trying to introduce you all to each other. I'm a rising tide lifts all the boats kind of guy. And if you go in there, you can go talk to each other. Speaking of that, here's our pages, LinkedIn Startup Council page, and then my personal page. If we haven't connected already, I'd be happy to connect with you and keep in touch. We post a lot of interesting things on LinkedIn. I find that it's a very useful channel because we can curate and share interesting articles with you. And here's the funding recommendations. And gosh, I got too many things going on here, but they're all trying to help you. Let me give you two more, okay, and then I will stop. There's this, which we didn't talk about at all today. If you're overseas, this is especially for people like Shadab or Ian. Or if you live in not a big city here in the States, like you don't live in Palo Alto or New York, this is, I think, the first calendar in the world that lists only virtual events, so you can attend from anywhere, and only for startup founders. So they're not all our events. We're taking listings from all over the world. And in fact, if any of you are producing events, you can submit them. And it's a newsletter that just pumps out events to help educate people who don't live, like I said, in Palo Alto, LA, or New York, and you want to participate in the innovator economy, and this is a newsletter that will show you all kinds of events that you can participate in. And that's a free service from the Startup Council. And what was it I said too? Okay, so speaking of events, we have meetup groups in 40-plus cities around the world, about 50,000 members all over the world. So if we have one in your city, these are mostly major cities, but all across the U.S. and then many places around the world. You know, I don't think we have one in Dhaka, Shadab. We should. actually, Shadab, you know, I know the guys at Bangladesh Angels. You should message me. If you don't know them, that might be useful to you. Find me on LinkedIn or not LinkedIn, sorry. Go to Scott Fox or any of our websites and you can contact me. That might be useful for you. Anyway, meetups. We have meetups in, like I said, in 40-plus cities around the world. So if you have events in your town that appeal to startups, we can help you publicize them in those towns. And we don't have them everywhere, so we could start a few more, but we've hit most of the major population centers, so Paris, Berlin, you know, Miami, Chicago, LA, Seattle, Sydney, Manila, Singapore, Bangalore, Mumbai, Riyadh, so forth. We have chapters all over the world, Cape Town. So if that's helpful to you, you can subscribe to join those on Meetup. You can go find them in your town, or if you have events in your town that you'd like to publicize, please submit them, and we will pump them out to help you generate the community where you live, because that's what we're doing here at Startup Council. So if you haven't joined Startup Council already, it's free, and that's the website right there. Please go and sign up. And all we're asking is some likes and subscribes and some comments. So if this was helpful to you, I appreciate you being here, and we appreciate Joe Daniels being here as well. If we can be helpful to you, that's why we're here. Please, in return, like and share and comment. That's what drives all of this, and we're trying to create a flywheel that helps everybody find more success as entrepreneurs, because, like I said at the beginning of the program, entrepreneurs are the ones that make things happen. We are the number one source of positive change in the world, and I'm here to support you, and I'm glad you came with us today. So thanks for joining us, and hope to see you again. We do this once a month. Thinking about doing it more often, so if that's a good idea, let me know. And we're going to be putting out a poll soon. I need to know like our ratio of pitches versus questions versus guests. So watch for that. We'll be connecting with you soon. So that's all I've got for you today. I hope that you and your startup are going on and kicking some ass, making your positive dent in the universe. And thanks for being here. Please like and subscribe and share. Okay, we'll see you again soon. Thanks for listening and watching.